Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel, presented by Mainstay Financial and Anna Lee Leonard, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com. Or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
That's the truth. Ooh, yeah, that's what we're all about. We're all about winning and making people more successful and more secure with all of the assets that they've gathered through the years. Welcome to Winning with Mainstay and Anna Lee and Bob. I know Bob got caught up in a traffic jam this morning. Is he there yet, Davis?
Better believe it.
He made it.
All right. I mean, what did you do? Did you put it in J and jump over the cars or what?
Actually, I think I overreacted. I got here in plenty of time. So
good man.
Yeah.
Good man. Proud of you. Proud of you. Well, we're going to talk about some things today that are extremely important. I mean, actually, every week we try to talk about things that are important. But this is something that I find people will not do properly a lot of the time. And there is just no reason for this to happen. You know, I've got to say, though, Bob, before we start the show, when I was listening to the intro, and it says, you know, when Emily's not advising, she's consulting with other senior advisors. All right, people, here's the truth. When Emily's not advising, she's taking care of three schnauzers, going to the vet, paying their bills. This is why I can never retire, you understand. I have vet bills to pay. I mean, it's just, it's, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, you'd swear I had brain surgery 15 times with the money I've paid to these veterinarians. I told one of them the other day, I said, you know, when I first got schnauzers, I said, well, okay, it's better than a college paying for a college education. And I told the vet the other day, I said, you know, I have put three veterinarians' children through college.
Yeah. You have.
So, you know. What did I say? Nothing, but that's okay. Anyway, little rant for the morning because it's what's on my mind. But the reason I thought about it is because today we're going to talk about beneficiaries and doing a beneficiary audit. I mean, normally when people hear the word audit, what do they think of?
The IRS.
Hello. And none of us like that, right?
Right.
But we're going to talk about a beneficiary audit. Right. And that, to me, is something, I don't care what your age is, you need to review. I mean, the older we become as such, the quote-unquote more important it becomes because we are getting closer to that day when we're not going to be here anymore.
Right.
But we all know that young people pass away. I mean, it's especially now with this virus flying around all over the place.
Exactly.
So Bob, your first profession, you are an attorney and you still keep that license legal. So the biggest mistake I find with young people is what they do not do for their children.
Right. And, you know, we started the show talking about the dogs, the three dogs.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about children, but really beneficiaries can be, you know, a lot of things. They can be mm-hmm. children, your spouse, friends, family, your parents.
Yeah.
Obviously charitable entities. But, mm-hmm. you know, absolutely anything. But yes, young people, you know, I think maybe young people are so busy trying to get ahead and advance their careers and doing a lot of things that they should be doing that they don't really look into you know, what we used to call, you know, a beneficiary checkup or review, but mm-hmm. I really like, I mean, that is solid, a beneficiary audit, you know, that is really getting down on it.
Well, and I know I'm kind of diverting a little bit from where we originally started with this, but as I was thinking about this morning, I started thinking that's one of the biggest things that I find with younger people. They never do an audit. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, because they're busy, they're raising families, they're trying to promote a career. But the biggest thing is, I think most young people think they're invincible, mm-hmm. that, oh no, I'm not going to die at 25 or 30 or 40. I'm gonna, you know, 85, 90 maybe, right. But we all know it happens. And one of the biggest things I found is people do not take care of minor children correctly. They'll say, oh, if something happens to me, my mom and dad will take our children.
Right.
Bob, who gets the final decision on that?
The courts.
Hello.
That's right.
And is that always who you want?
You know, and it may end up being exactly who you want, but it's not going to be a simple process. And, you know, I talk to my daughter all the time about her children and if something mm-hmm. happened to them, and I said, you know, you need to formalize this. You know, go see an attorney. She's up there in Virginia and make it legal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because the courts, you know, and you and I both know we deal with a lot of young people who are maybe in between marriages, or they're on a second marriage, and they'll say, oh, you know, my present spouse will take care of the child. Mm-hmm. Well, the courts may come in and say, no, the biological father will get the child.
Right.
And that may not be a good decision. So just take care of that. I kind of got off the track, but that just hit me like a moving train. And it was like, oh gosh, yeah, we got to talk about that.
Right.
So if you have questions, you want to make a comment, call us 437-1620, either on what we're talking about today or something else that's on your mind, or you can text us if you don't want to get on the radio, or call, give David your question, and he'll give it to us if you're a little bit shy and you don't want to get on. So here's the worst thing I think that can happen is you don't do an audit, or you never set up beneficiaries, and you pass away, then what happens, Bob,
well,
if there's no designated beneficiary?
Yeah, if you do not designate a beneficiary, then it transfers in accordance with your estate, and that depends on whether you have a will or do not. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously we advise that you have a will, but with no beneficiary designation, it transfers in accordance with the terms of your estate.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's basically a next of kin type mm-hmm. thing.
Right.
And that may not be the person you want to get your money. In the Ed Slott class, I know every year we go over one case in particular where a gentleman, very successful in his business, had a very large 401k, and he and the wife had separated, and he always told the daughter he was leaving her his 401k if something happened to him. Well, guess what he never did? He never went to human resources and changed the beneficiary.
Right. Gosh.
He died.
How often do we hear about this?
Too much.
Right.
Too much. So the ex-wife did get all of the money. The daughter got none of it. So, you know, we got to make sure you're doing this the right way. So you want to, if you will, have a pen and paper with you right now, because I'm going to give you some things that if you write them down, they will help you. They will help your heirs. Reason it helps you is sometimes people forget.
Right.
So what do we do, Bob? Every time somebody comes in, we do what? We review.
Right. We review this. And beneficiary designations, you know, they deal with a lot of things. But I think first and foremost, we think of retirement accounts. Right, Annalee?
Yeah.
Retirement accounts, those are Roth. They're their IRAs or possibly their predecessors, the 401ks, the 403bs, possibly, outside of true retirement accounts, there are annuities, which may or may not be retirement accounts, life insurance, trust accounts, a revocable trust. You can always change the beneficiaries. Here's another one, Annalee. How often do we meet with folks? They will say, oh, yeah, I had my estate plan done. I had it done, 15 years ago.
Every 30 years ago.
Everything is fine. Oh, not only that, but maybe three different stops ago, like three different states ago that they lived in. And and they had a trust completed, and it maybe addressed their, their then-born children or whoever was important in their life, or maybe a different spouse, right? So, I like the whole idea of this beneficiary audit.
Yes.
But I would say those are really the four types that we run into. Retirement accounts. And there's several. Life insurance policies and annuities and trust accounts.
Yes. So let's kind of, I had actually to get a piece of paper, and this is what I want you to write across the top. And this way you can have your own beneficiary audit form. And I would highly advise you to make sure that your financial advisor has a copy of that. We keep a copy of this for our clients, whether they have accounts with us or not, because something may be at the bank, something may be at their work. But if they pass away, I feel it's my responsibility to help the beneficiary claim money. Because people don't realize what a beneficiary or an executor of an account has to go through until you do one yourself. It can be extremely time consuming. It could be very frustrating. It could be very easy if things are set up correctly. So on the top of your form, write beneficiary audit form, beneficiary audit form. Now, the first column should be what, Bob?
Well, the first column should be the account name or the account number.
Correct.
Yeah.
So what's the account number? Then what kind of an account is it? Is it an IRA? Is it a 401k? Is it a joint account? Is it a payable on death account? Is it a trust account? What type of account is it?
Right.
And then the next one is extremely important, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Where is it? Who's the custodian? who's managing the money, or just the company it's with?
Oh yeah. I mean, people will come in and they'll say, "Listen, I'm trying to find stuff from this person, that person," and they'll come in with an account number. They'll come in with a type of account, and then I'll say, well, what type of an account is it? Who has it? Well, I don't know.
Right.
Can't you help me find it? No, I cannot help you find it.
Right.
Because there are a gazillion places it could be.
That's right.
I mean, so you say it's a CD. Great. Which bank is holding that?
Right.
Or is it with a custodian like TD Ameritrade or Fidelity? They have CDs.
Yeah. And, when we, let's say there's a surviving spouse, and the surviving spouse, and I think this is usually the way it happens. The financial savvy one, the one that took care of everything financially, they're the ones that die first, and they leave the surviving spouse with hopefully a good idea of where everything is. But how many times have we run into folks and they'll say, my husband passed away and he handled everything, but I know we had some CDs, I know we had this, that, and the other.
Right.
And what do you tell them? you know, go through all the stuff. You're going to have to conduct a forensic audit and find out, you know, where the money is. You're going to have to wait for the mail to arrive, and that's hopefully going to have some statements and, you know, statements arriving.
Right.
And then
right.
you can kind of back into where the money is. But but our hands are pretty much tied.
Right. And then you have the other problem of the people who have signed up for electronic statements.
Yes.
And they don't leave behind passwords
yes.
or where accounts are. And then guess what? You don't get anything by paper.
Right. And, you know, every time I think about electronic statements, and they're a good thing, I think about that. What if something happens to me and there's something that somebody misses? Now, I've got, you know, I've got a letter with everything. My sister has it. Connie has it, you know, just in case,
yeah.
you know, just in case I go with Connie, you know, and, you know, my sister has it. And, you know, you've got to have a contingency plan on the contingencies. So, but of course you want to hand that to somebody you trust.
Right. You definitely do. Yeah. Don't just go give that to, you know, your neighbor or your spendthrift kid who can't keep any money in their pocket because it burns. That's not the person you want having this list.
Or spendthrift kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not the one you want having a list of what you've got.
Right. Right. Sometimes there's more than
one. And that's
what
I'm saying. You know, this is true. Yeah. This is true. So who is holding the money? That's the number one. Then, so we're going across the top of the page. This is your beneficiary audit form. You're going to put down first the account number, secondly, the type of account. So that's going to be IRA, non-IRA, a CD, an annuity that is an IRA. And people get confused about that. They'll say, I have an IRA. And when they come in and talk to us, and I know you've heard this, they'll say, I have an IRA. And I'll say, great. What is it in? Well, it's an IRA. Well, I understand that, but it has to be in something.
Right.
It's either an IRA that's inside of an annuity, an IRA that's inside of a CD, an IRA that's inside of a securities account that's out in the market. Mm-hmm. That IRA must have a container to hold it.
Right.
So what type of an account? And then who's the custodian? Then the next two columns are very important. So the first is the primary beneficiary. So, Bob, you want to tell them what that is?
The primary beneficiary is the person or entity or persons that receive it upon your demise. It is not the person
they're first in line.
That's right. It is not the person that steps in if you're sick. It's not the person that makes decisions if you're not available, okay? The primary beneficiary is activated at death and at death only. And again, it can be your children, your spouse, your parents, anybody. It can be a charitable entity. It can be dogs. It can be, but held for the benefit of dogs by possibly a trustee. So that's the primary.
And while we're talking about primaries, again, this is where I'm going to go back to minor children. You cannot directly leave money to minor children because the courts will come in and appoint a custodian. So you if you want to leave money to a minor child, you have to go in inside of your will, or if you have a full-blown trust. But let's just say you have a regular will, you don't need a full-blown trust. There's a paragraph you put in there that's called a testamentary trust. Do you want to tell them what that does, Bob?
Right. A testamentary trust is a trust that activates at death. It is actually a trust that is housed inside your will. And once you die and your estate is settled or begins to be settled, the assets or the estate assets begin to travel into the trust that you have now funded through your estate. But a testamentary trust is the opposite of a living trust, one that you set up during your lifetime.
Yeah. So you know, if you've got a grandchild and you might want to say grandchild, little Susie is going to inherit, and let's just take a number, $50,000. And her mother, Ruthie, will be the executor of that account to make sure that that money is used for the child's welfare. Mm-hmm. Now, you can be as specific or as loose as you want with that. You can say that little Susie doesn't get that money until she reaches it, or you can say that that's to be used for her education, and her mom is in control of that.
Right.
But you can't leave money to a minor and expect them to know what to do with it.
Right.
Okay. So.
And these are
next
called.
Column.
Those are called the discretionary distribution provisions of the trust.
Well, you just go ahead with your lawyer talk. Oh, man. I love it.
Right.
I love it. That
right.
was a good one, Mom. That was good. I like that. All right. So we want to have discretion over what's going on. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that word. That's a good word. And then after the primary beneficiary, you're going to have the contingent beneficiaries. And the contingents don't come into play unless what happens, Bob?
Unless the primary is no longer with us, okay?
Yep.
And that can mean a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also mean, you know, that possibly the charitable entity is not there, and then a contingent beneficiary steps up.
That's a possibility, yeah, because mm-hmm. normally we have as primary beneficiaries your spouse.
Right.
But suppose you and your spouse are traveling together. We do a lot of, well, not this past year we haven't, but, you know, people do a lot of traveling together, either by automobile, by plane, whatever. And if there's an accident and both of you should unfortunately happen to pass away at the same time, you have to have a contingent. Who do you want to have that money if your primary isn't there? So if you have four kids, you can list each child by name. You have the ability to either give them equal shares, or you might have one that let's say has really done a lot for the family, really done a lot for the two people, the parents. You might want to leave that child more money. That's perfectly legal, because beneficiary forms are a very private thing. Mm-hmm. We cannot, as advisors, if son number one comes in and he says, okay, I'm one of the beneficiaries, well, great, we will get you a beneficiary form. Son number one cannot say how much went to son number three. He can say it, but we can't answer it. We cannot tell him.
Right.
So, good way to pass monies on other than a will, which is a public instrument and is read out loud, where everybody knows what everybody's getting. You do that, I advise people to be pretty fair, because if not, it can create a lot of dissension in the family. But beneficiary forms are a nice way to, if you have a child that needs additional help, or who has given up things to take care of you. We know of several of our clients, Bob, that one of the children has left a job mm-hmm. to take care of parents.
Right, yes.
You know, so they're not putting into their 401k. They've interrupted their career, their advancement. And you might want to leave extra to that child to compensate them for that, because they've given up a lot. So
yes.
When we come back from hearing all of the good news that's going on in the world, hopefully Mark's going to give me some good news today. We're going to continue talking about the beneficiary audit, why you need to do this on the regular basis, and why you need to have a copy, family member needs to have a copy, and your financial advisor needs to have a copy. this is just, it's a good thing. It keeps things together. And I think if nothing else this year, we have all become more aware of how quickly someone can pass away. Right. So let's go hear some news, and then we'll be back with you in just a bit. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Win. Got money on my mind. Money on my mind. And they stay there. And they stay there. And they stay there. Welcome back to Winning with Mainstay and Annalee and Bob. We are here today talking about the importance of doing a beneficiary audit on a regular basis. And Davis, I think we had a few questions come in. What are those, babe?
Yeah, I'll start with the first question. The first question says, do you have to name a beneficiary for your IRA?
Definitely. There's no other way to answer that question. If you want to make sure of where your money goes, you have to state that. It has to be legally documented either by the custodian who's holding it or by the 401k. And that's a great question because people make a big mistake. They'll go from a 401k to an IRA, or they'll move an IRA to another IRA, and they think the beneficiaries automatically carry over. That's not true.
Right.
Anytime you move them, you make a change, you check those beneficiaries, please.
Right. And really, why would you not want to name a beneficiary? It would be a very bad idea, because then it pours over to your estate, and guess what? Your estate has no life expectancy. It's all tax. I mean, we could go on and on of all the reasons to not name beneficiaries of your IRA. But
And then you're going to have everybody arguing with everybody. No, Dad loved me the most. Yeah. Oh, no, he didn't. He thought you were me. Really loved me. And no.
I do.
Beneficiary.
I do have one. There was one time that I had a client who named his estate as the beneficiary. And I talked to him about this and talked to him. And what happened was, he was getting a loan from the bank, and of course, in his will, the first line of his will says, you know, before anything goes to beneficiaries, that all of his debts and expenses have to be paid off. Well, he had a big loan with the bank. It was an unsecured loan, and this bank, it was a community bank, said the only way we'll lend you this money is if you name your estate the beneficiary. This is like 20 years ago. And and he did. And I said, well, you know, that's not a good idea. And of course the bank really can't enforce that, but that's the way he got the money. And his answer to me why he was doing it, he said, well, I'm not going to die. I'm just borrowing money, and this is what they want me to do.
Oh,
so very interesting.
Yeah. You better hope the bank doesn't have a hitman.
Well, I know this. You can't name the community bank the beneficiary. So he named his estate so that the bank would be made whole. So very interesting.
Oh my gosh. All right. I think we had another question.
We did have another question. This texter writes, I have been told not to title property jointly with anyone. Why is that?
Oh gosh. Go, Annalee.
Well, that all depends on who you're titling it with. I mean, if it's your spouse, that is community property. That is what I would say, what probably 99% of people, when you're buying a home, will do that jointly. If you have a business and you have a business partner, you may buy a building jointly, and it may be jointly with right of survivorship, which means if you die, all of it goes to the other person,
right.
Or joint tenants, which means if one passes away, only half of that belongs to the other. The other half belongs to the survivors of that person.
Yeah.
What we have said, and you may have heard other people say, is be very, very careful about having a joint ownership with your child, let's say, on a home. Because if that child is sued for any reason, and we know in our society people sue people for everything, if that child is sued, if their name is on your home becomes part of the lawsuit.
Right.
If that child goes through a divorce, your home is part of the divorce settlement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got to be real careful. I mean, besides your spouse and a business ownership, I don't know of any other reason, Bob, would you to have a joint ownership?
No, and we see it a lot. And, you know, the only time, and I need to be very careful in saying this, is mm-hmm. if you have an elderly parent and you have sort of an operating account to pay bills, and there's never more
yeah.
than a couple thousand in it, and you know, it just makes things a lot easier to have that child on there as a joint owner. But as a rule, you never want to title assets jointly with anyone other than a spouse.
Yeah. Or like I said, a business, if you have a business agreement.
Right. And that would be more of a tenancy yeah. in common, where it's the interests are divided, where there's no right of survivorship. I agree. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully that answers that question. If it doesn't, text us or call us back and we'll go more deeply into it. Any other ones, Davis?
No, looks like we're good at the moment, but just a reminder that listeners can call or text in with any questions or comments at 437-1620.
Yes, please do. We'd love to hear from you. I love to know what you're thinking. And, you know, I've got to honestly say this, that sometimes people say things that they really don't have an explanation for. So be very careful about that. Make sure that it can be backed up legally. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the beneficiary audit, how important it is. And I'm going to throw you a curveball here, Bob.
Okay.
Because, you know, IRAs, now we have all the new rules on them that if you inherit one and you're not the spouse, they took away our ability to do what we call the stretch IRA.
Right.
Okay. So you've got to take that money out within 10 years unless you fall into one of the specific categories, a surviving spouse, a minor child, or the account owner, a disabled person, someone chronically ill, and a beneficiary that's not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner.
Right.
Those people get the right to stretch it. So here's the question. And our listeners can answer this because we'll go back to it at the end of the show. Greta is 72. She inherits an IRA from her sister, Emma, who is 67. Okay, Greta's 72. Her sister is Emma, who is 67. She leaves her IRA to Greta. Greta is an eligible designated beneficiary. Can she stretch the required minimum distributions from the IRA? Yes or no? Is she considered an eligible designated beneficiary? And can she stretch that IRA for the remainder of her life? Greta is 72. Her sister is 67. So we'll see what you come up with on that one. Okay, we've got another question that came in. What do we have, Davis?
Yes, and this involves multiple questions. We can see what we can get to in this one. But I'll start off with the first question. Who should have a trust? I always thought it was a complicated, multi-family, rich person thing to do. What if you're single with assets?
Bob, you want to answer that?
Well, I think in that instance, it depends on who your beneficiaries are or who you want the money to mm-hmm. go to. A single person, you know, I would say the most likely person a single person would leave it to are possibly parents, siblings, other family members. Now, if you're a single person, you're older, and you have all these nieces and nephews in mind, and they are possibly not necessarily not the age of majority, but perhaps they haven't matured enough, and maybe they're not equipped to handle the money given their age. And we know people in their 30s that really aren't equipped. That person who is considering having a trust may want to establish a trust to house the money for the benefit of those nieces and nephews. It really kind of depends on how they want to leave the money and who they want to leave it to. It depends on their age, their maturity, and really lots of things. I think the thing that really the interesting thing about that question is it's a single person, and you know, you don't have those natural beneficiaries like a spouse and children.
So more important for you to do an audit on who your beneficiaries are if you are single. So you can, by a beneficiary form, pass on your 401k, pass on your IRA. You can pass your bank accounts on through a beneficiary form or what's called a payable on death form. If you own a home, that might be the one thing that would become a probatable type of thing. So probably you don't need a trust. But as Bob said, you might have nieces and nephews that are younger. That might just be a paragraph called a testamentary trust inside of your will that says if you die and this money goes to these minors, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's just part of your will. That's not the big full-blown trust hoopla.
Right.
Okay.
And for our listener who asked the question, you know, I do want to point out that the answer to that question is in the context of who to name as beneficiaries and leave it to. There are other great reasons to have a trust, and such as if the owner of the assets and the person that creates the trust is declared incompetent or for some reason becomes incapacitated, it prevents the need for a full-blown guardianship, and somebody, the trustee, the successor trustee to this person, can step in and manage their affairs and manage their money. There are lots of good reasons to have a trust, but we're really only answering it in the sense of naming beneficiaries.
And you know, if you're a very successful person, and let's say you have a lot of money and a lot of asset, or you've got rental properties, and you know, then we might need to sit down and help guide you through that to see if a trust could be beneficial for you if something, or for your heirs if something were to happen to you. But probably you don't need one. So, but beneficiaries you have got to have. Okay. And now, you said that question had multiple parts to it, Davis. Right. What else?
Yes. We also had another separate text come in. So I'll leave off with this one text. And because it involves beneficiaries, after you name beneficiaries and a will trust gets read, how do you prevent a property from being robbed by a ticked off family member when you leave things to a charity?
Oh gosh, Well, go ahead, Bob.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the only person that's able to act is if you leave. If the governing document at death is your last will and testament, then your personal representative here in Florida or executor in another state is the only person empowered to make decisions on where the money goes. And of course, if it's in a trust, it would be the trustee or the successor trustee to you that is empowered to make decisions. Now, they are held to a very, very high standard. And they must comply with the terms of the trust or the will. But as far as being ticked off and doing what you want, that's really not going to happen without repercussions.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to say, make sure you have a executor or a personal representative that is a strong person whom you trust.
Right.
So it is up to that person to make sure that properties are secured, that they are kept safe and given to whomever you wish them to pass on to. Right. And unfortunately, that's one of the worst things that happen. Very often relatives think they have the right when someone passes away to go into the house and just take whatever they want. That is not true. That is not legal. You could actually be sued by the estate for doing that kind of stuff. So just make sure you have a personal representative or an executor who is a strong person who will enforce what you want enforced.
Okay? Exactly. Great answer.
All right. Do we have anything else, David, before we go on?
So we do have another text message. Then this is a little bit complicated, but I have a piece of property that I own jointly with my ex-wife. She has not been heard from in over a year. I'm currently going through the court system to try and find her for child custody and support. I am receiving no child support from her and would like to get her name removed from the deed of the property so I can sell it. My name is on the loan, but both of our names are on the deed. Is this possible? Wow. Thanks and love the show.
Wow. Okay. Very complicated. I'm not going to, obviously the listener is also trying to get the ex-spouse to pay child support and other things. I'm not going to really answer that. But as far as getting her name off the deed, that's really not going to happen unless she predeceases him.
Or unless they find her and she signs off.
Right,
on it.
Right. If she's, yeah.
But if there is no child support being paid, whatever, could they not possibly go to court and claim that property as part of what is owed?
Yeah.
Could that happen?
Yeah. Without legal proceedings and taking legal action, really nothing is going to happen. I think the path of least resistance is finding her and, locating her and, trying to work something out. But if child support hasn't been paid and that hasn't been pursued, it just sounds like somebody that, I would hope the listener has tried to locate in the past and just can't be located.
Yeah, it sounds like you need a really good attorney to help you work with this and possibly an investigator to
I was going to say, before going to see an attorney, you need to find out if this person even exists anymore, if they haven't heard from her in this long.
Yeah, and that's a possibility.
Yeah.
That's a possibility. Wow. I hope you work that out.
Interesting question.
Yeah, I'd love for you to keep in touch with us personally because I'd love to know how this turns out for you. That's just not right. But okay. All right. Any other one, Davis?
We're good for right now, Annalie.
Okay. So, as we're talking about this, and I think you see what's happening, the importance of having beneficiaries on everything that you have that is an account, because it can turn into a messy situation. I had one client that for years, bless her heart, she would come in and she'd be ranting and raving and, take his name off that beneficiary form. I don't want him on there. And I'd say, okay, who do we want to put on? And she'd put somebody else on. And it was because her son was at that time dating a woman that the mother did not like. And she thought the woman was a gold digger and yada, yada, yada. And she'd take the son's name off. And, 6-7 months later, she'd come back and, oh, that darling boy. And we'd put him back on.
Right.
And I used to always think to myself, heaven, I hope whenever she passes away, the right beneficiary is on here, because that one son, he was her only child, is going to have an unbelievable surprise, and there's nothing I can do.
Right.
Because I am sworn to keeping everything that is told to me within that office. So it's not like I could call the son and say, you better behave yourself. Yeah. So finally, he married the woman, and she decided she loved the guy. So guess the son is now the primary beneficiary, and the daughter-in-law is the contingent. So it's, you know, just make sure.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is the flip of the coin. But I bring that story up for you to make sure you were consistently checking who your beneficiaries are,
you know,
especially as you get older.
Yes, and Annalee, that reminds me of something else. How many times do we meet with people and they're just, you know, the analysis paralysis kicks in,
yeah,
and they can't decide, okay,
can't decide.
This one is a doctor living in, you know, wherever, and
yeah,
this one has that, and you know, look, something is better than nothing. Make a decision.
Hello.
You can always change it. It's a change of beneficiary designation form. Big deal. But, you know,
yeah,
make a decision and put something on there, but don't lament. You can always change
it. You can change it as long as you are alive. You can change it.
Right.
And the reason you want to keep up, like I said, especially as we're getting older, sometimes our beneficiaries are also getting older.
Right.
One of my dearest clients, her sisters were her beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Well, she is now 90 and she was the baby of the family.
Right.
So guess what had happened? Several of the sisters passed away.
Yep.
So it was like, okay, who do you want their share to go to? Do you want it to go to your other sisters? Do you want it to go to their children? Because they had a huge family. And I said, you know, if you leave this the way it is going to turn into a mess.
Right.
Because now they got to go track all these people down.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the heirs of the siblings had passed away. So then it was going to go to their children. And man, just check the beneficiaries, people.
Another thing we run into, and this is something I've always shared with my clients, is when somebody dies, and let's say they leave it to their daughter, they're not leaving it to their daughter and their son-in-law. Well, daughter comes in, you meet with her, because you know the parents have passed, and it's time to transfer the assets, and you know, in accordance with their will, to her. And I share with you know, in this instance, the daughter, what we'd like to do is open an account in your name and your name only, because that is what is supposed to happen. It's supposed to go to you, not you,
mm-hmm,
and your husband. Even though it's a great marriage and everything, I'd like to get that part right, and then down the road you can do whatever you like. But let's go ahead and make sure we honor the provisions that it goes to you, not to
get
you
it
and
your right.
husband. Right.
Get it right. Let's go back to our question we asked before break, whether Greta is what is called an eligible designated beneficiary and whether or not she can stretch that IRA. Now, remember, eligible designated beneficiaries, surviving spouse, minor children of the account owner, disabled individuals, chronically ill, and beneficiaries not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner. Greta was 72. She gets an IRA from her sister, who is 67. Is Greta considered an eligible designated beneficiary? What do we think, Bob?
All right. Here's what I'm going with. All right.
Okay.
Now, Greta is not.
You got to answer me quick.
She's not a spouse. She's not a spouse, correct?
No.
Okay. I am saying she is not able to have a stretch IRA, even though she's not younger.
Okay, let's stop. Yes, she is.
Oh.
Because she is not more than 10 years younger.
Younger.
So she can stretch.
That's crazy.
Please, people, go out, do some good. Say please. Say thank you. And just help people out. We'll make it a better world, okay? We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.